Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Jackson Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 24. NASDAQ Futures down 81. This is following a kind of odd day. Yesterday we were down all day, and then just we do what we kind of do is we rally up back on the close. Some combination of buy the dip and mutual fund buying, and all of a sudden we finished kind of, well, I'll give the exact numbers. The futures finished up on the day. Let's see where the actual spot did. Dow was down 115. The S&P's up 5. NASDAQ up 93. After being down, like I say, most of the day. So we have this, we're in this pattern of late day recovery, and in the morning we're down again. So we're down again this morning. Do we have a Professor Carl?
You do.
How are you, buddy?
Well, you know, this is some curious stuff. The last few days, but also some of the other things are going on. Roaring Kitty.
Yeah.
By the way, for all those people who think that it's an outrage that somebody would be upset that this person posted this statement of his positions, you realize that he had to have $200 million, roughly, in order to open those, right?
Well, how much did he pay for the calls?
Well, it's not just that. It's the underlying stock position he allegedly has.
How many shares of stock? I know he said he had 120,000 calls.
Yeah, but he's also got. I mean, between the two of them, it's it's $50-60 million.
Well, weren't they talking about the notional value of the calls if they became stock?
Well, but that's BS. Okay, yeah. You and I both know that, yeah. Right? I mean, you know, if I go out and I buy calls, I don't have to have the funds to exercise those if I'm the buyer of the call.
Correct.
I do if I'm short them.
Right.
But because I could get assigned. But I don't have to have, and I know all about that. I mean, I got a call from my brokerage during the middle of the crash because I shorted a whole crap ton of GE puts. And they said, do you realize you could have those put on you? Yes, I do.
Yes, unfortunately, I do. Yes.
Well, no, actually, I wanted to get put. That's what I was trying. I was trying to buy the stock at $5. I wanted to get assigned. It didn't happen. It never traded through the strike. But I was like, yeah, I don't believe the company's going to be zero, and I really kind of got pretty close. Got within like 60 cents or something like that, but it never hit the strike. But yeah, I actually got a phone call from the brokerage. He said, "Do you have any idea what you just did?" Yes, I know exactly what I did. Okay, just as long as you're sure. I was like, "Yep, yeah, that's all good." But no, if you're as the buyer of the calls, yes, he could sit on them up to, but generally a brokerage will not let you do that anyway. If the capital's not there, they're going to close the position on you before you get assigned it at expiration, because that's the only time it can happen if you're the buyer. The reality of it is that's fine. However, has anybody actually documented that this guy has the capital? In other words, he didn't just make it up. It's not a spreadsheet. Okay, I haven't seen anyone show any evidence that this guy's running around with that kind of money.
I mentioned that yesterday when Greg was here. Now Greg's very bright dude. but he's the younger generation. I said, what makes you think he's got 120,000 calls? He could have 12. Those aren't his sheets from PTI, for God's sake. I mean, how do you know what he's got? Well, why would he lie? Why would he lie?
Right?
Why does anybody believe any of this stuff?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of the it's the same sort of BS that we saw in spades yesterday in a congressional hearing. I only watched snippets of it because I have a very nice widescreen curved monitor in my office. On since I don't have television per se, I mean I've got one upstairs, but it doesn't have anything other than there's no antenna hooked to it, no cable hooked to it. Okay, so I'm gonna watch such a thing. I'd be watching it on my basically what my mounts to my trading screen, and I knew I'd smash it or shoot it or both, and then I'd have to buy another one. Therefore, I'd have to stimulate the economy.
Why don't you at least have an antenna hooked up to your TV?
Well, I do, but it gets all of about 5 stations over the air. I mean, I don't live in the middle of Chicago. You know, even with the DirecTV, the Direct Digital now, you know, there's 3 channels on one channel and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
The only reason I have it is for the occasional sport ball game that I want to watch that I don't want to go to a bar and sit in a bar and watch it. I can watch it in my living room. The amusing thing with this is that Fauci was in front of Congress yesterday. Okay, now he's had several closed-door hearings.
I heard bits and pieces. It sounded pretty bizarre.
Well, he tried to claim that he didn't, he didn't coerce anybody to do anything, including the shots, and they didn't know that COVID was airborne, and therefore, the mask thing was based on it being droplets. And the entire thing was a panoply of lies. Now, if you or I showed up in front of Congress and we lied like this, we'd be hauled off in irons, literally out of the hearing room, okay? And for those listeners that haven't read all my stuff throughout that entire period of time, I mean, this is over 4 years, we knew in March and April of 2020 that this virus was not droplet transmitted, that it was airborne, and we also knew that it was in flatulence, it was in farts. And the reason we knew that is because there was a study published out of Iran, at a hospital in Iran, where they were dealing with a bunch of people that were getting extremely sick and dying, and they could not culture the virus off the trays, that the tray thing that they slide underneath the bed so that you can eat in the hospital.
Yeah.
Right. They basically swabbed every single surface in the room, tried to figure out where they could actually culture virus. So, dead fragments are not worth anything. You got to be able to culture something. So they're trying to figure this out because, of course, they, like everybody else at the time, are trying to figure out how do we deal with this without killing all the people that are trying to take care of these poor sick SOBs that got it, right? I mean, everybody's trying to figure that out at the beginning because nobody knows. And so what they found was that the only places they could culture actual virus were in the bathrooms, in the air vents at the top, where the suction is for the air vents, all over the place in the bathrooms, and especially in the air vents, and in a couple of other places, all related to air handling in the patient room. On the trays, they found nothing. Now, excuse me, if this is from someone sneezing or coughing or whatever, and it's in droplets, it'd be all over the place, where the patient is, right? But it's not. No. This thing's airborne. Right? They knew this within the first couple of months.
How does that explain the super spreader guys?
Oh, because you walk into the room and you take a fart.
Ah.
Okay, and I pointed this. As soon as that thing showed up, I said, this is in the GI tract. It's fecal oral. It's spread the same way polio is, and it's going to be impossible to control with any kind of mitigation measures. You can't do it except, number one, don't eat your own crap or someone else's, right? But in terms of actually trying to do something about containing the spread to ordinary, forget about it. You're wasting your time. Masks are worthless. They're going to do nothing. You can't even control smoke, okay, which is 100 times larger you can't even prevent being choked by smoke by putting a, you know, an N95 on. It's not going to do anything.
Let's get back to your one comment, if you don't mind, about if you and I said something like that in Congress, we would
arrested.
When have you ever seen anybody arrested for lying in front of Congress? I've been watching it my whole life.
Well, actually, there were a couple of people that got cited for contempt, criminal contempt, and it was all over Trump's stuff that Trump did. And then, you know, and then after after Biden wins, they haul him in front of Congress. They actually did indict a couple of people. But this guy,
well, I mean, they never indicted the tobacco guys, saying there was nothing wrong with cigarettes.
I know. All right, and then but then the other thing that Fauci said that no one coerced anybody to do anything. Then one of the folks played the tape of him on the air saying we have to make life basically impossible for anybody who doesn't take the shots. You'd be surprised how fast your resolve crumbles when it's either take it or be fired, take it or don't go shopping, take it or he goes down the list, and by the way, that's exactly what they did. Okay.
Well, they work through the companies.
Which
really sucks.
Well, which is really illegal.
Yeah. Well, it's also a total bend around the freedoms we're supposed to have.
Well, yeah, but he claimed he never did it. Okay, I mean, that's someone to take.
You have the freedom to demonstrate, but if you do, you should get fired. We'll talk to your boss.
It's just stuff like this. We have, and then you have. Like I said, you know, here's a, you know, here's a supposedly roaring kitty, right? Okay. Think about this, Chief. This is wild-eyed, illegal stuff. If there's any hint of untruthfulness to any of this, all right? If I think about me going out, I find some. Oh, let's take a company that's been around for an awfully long time, but today is in the ditch. BlackBerry, yeah. Right? Trades under $3 a share. And I sit there and I'm going to buy a bunch of, I think he can still get calls on them. I think their options are still listed.
Sure. Absolutely.
They've been around forever. So, of course, they have options, right? So I buy a bunch of cheap calls and nowhere near the kind of position that Kitty supposedly had, but I buy a bunch of them. And then I make up a fake spreadsheet that says I own $65 million worth of notional value of those things at today's price. And I post that all over Twitter. And of course, and my reason for doing this is the company has an AI strategy. Yeah. It's going to be the king of the world of AI because they own the microkernel architecture that they bought. They bought legitimately, okay? They really did. I mean, that's not BS. It's the central component of the automation and such that they're selling into the vehicle market, okay? Which is real, right? That's not a lie. However, the lie part is the AI part, right? That they're going to be the king of the hill with that. Now, maybe they would like to be the king of the hill, but there's absolutely no evidence that that's going to come to fruition. But I put that out there, and all of a sudden, the stock trades at $30, and then I cashier all the calls.
Well, yeah, well, without a doubt. I wonder what did P.T. Barnum say? There's a sucker born every minute and two to take him.
Yep.
I wonder. I mean, for years I watched. The thing that Dr. J uses, the different unusual option activity and stock. I mean, I had the raw feed, but I never stood there looking at it all day long.
There's a subscription service for it now called Unusual Whales.
Yeah, well, but I mean, there's his was early on. His was the best because it identified stuff that was traded on the offer of the bid and didn't just trade.
Right.
So if you traded a spread. In the middle, all the old ones that used to pop up there is unusual activity, but John's was the offer or the bid, so it gave you some idea that the person had something behind what he was doing, and not just a covered right or something like that. Anyway, I'd watch this, and then constantly, you'd see some, I mean, again, of it, everything takes, it's not like it's useless, I mean, it isn't, it's another arrow in the quiver, but you need a lot of arrows to figure out a market, right? And but I would see something where maybe, you know, pick a stock, Triple M or something, which isn't going anywhere. All of a sudden, one day, somebody's buying something. And then I'd look, I'd remember it. Next day, somebody's buying something else, somebody's buying something else. All of a sudden, the stock may be creeping up a little bit. What I would look to do some kind of spread where maybe they were driving the volatility higher in certain calls or puts. And I would buy other ones that were cheaper and sell those. I mean, I would do some kind of a spread. I mean, I wouldn't just take anybody's word for it. Although, if it was 2-3 days in a row, I might get a little bit of an idea that something might be going on here. But constantly, Carl, you'd see stuff go by, like some guy, I won't say an idiot, because who knows what kind of position the guy had. Somebody will buy, like, where do I have the VIX? I got the VIX at 1382. Somebody would buy, you know, 20,000 of the when the hell's the election? November, the October, you know, 70 VIX calls or something.
Oh, right.
Right. What am I supposed to do with that? I mean, is this guy Roaring Kitty? Or somebody will buy, like, GLDs at 215. That's the gold ETF. Somebody might buy, you know, 40,000 of the next year, or say December, you know, 275s or something, which would mean gold to be at 2750. Okay, I mean, somebody did that. Why he might have some massive portfolio that, you know, this is some huge inflation hedge. It's his Armageddon strategy. You know, the VIX, if the market goes down 40%, he's going to make money on the VIX maybe. But also, I mean, like, these are crazy things. Why would anybody, I mean, this guy buying all this stuff, last time I looked, was yesterday, GameStop made a penny last year.
Right.
I mean, no matter what this guy buys, they still made a penny last year, and I don't know if they're going to do that this year. I don't know the company that well, so I'm not going to give a recommendation, but it looks to me like this isn't exactly AI. I mean, it isn't exactly something. I mean, what it seems to me, it's some combination of somebody somehow having information on all how much short interest there is out there. They jam it in the middle of the night when the market probably shouldn't even be open, in my opinion, especially on stocks like that. I'm not saying the future shouldn't trade. And all of a sudden it runs up. I don't know, people even get margin calls in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden everybody pulls their offers and the thing just runs up. It's no kind of a market that we're used to trading during the day. And yet some combination of all that, you can jam this up. You know, I've got the thing down 71 cents. Where's the yesterday morning? 43? I mean,
yeah.
It's 27, 29 today.
I saw, you know, I saw it. I've got a high tick of 47.50.
Okay, yeah, during the show it was like 43, and it was actually sneaking down during the show. But I mean,
well, that was like 7 o'clock Sunday night, though.
Okay, but it was almost that high yesterday morning. It was 43 when I came in.
Yeah, I mean, but that's insane.
Well, there's nobody there. I mean,
well, there's no liquidity. So if you go hit it, well, guess what happens? Right.
Well, I mean, I don't even know, to be honest with you. We don't trade in the middle of the night. I don't want my people doing it. I mean, we have some people through our IB platform who'll trade in the middle of the night, mostly futures. But, I've been around this block a while. If I tried to buy 20,000 shares, a market order in GameStop on Sunday night at 10 o'clock, who the hell exactly is going to sell it to me?
Well, right.
I mean, right. Why would I even, and if I have any kind of an order, if I have a resting order, why won't I move it? If I come in with something that big, why don't we? Okay, we were offered at 28. I guess now we're open at 32, 40, 38, or 42, and so I might grab it if it's a market.
Well, I mean, if I happen to have a position that I'm deeply underwater on, you can bet that I might have an order up there to sell it. You know, some stupid.
Well, I mean, if you're covered by, say you did own 100 calls, then you certainly, why wouldn't you have a stack? I mean, I wouldn't do this because, boy, what a pain in the ass. But if I bought 100 calls, which represents 100 times 100 is what, 10,000, right? So,
right.
I mean, I guess I could tonight, if the stock's there at 27.39, I could put an offer in overnight at, say, 40, just in case. But then I got the calls behind me. If I sell it, then I just exercise my calls and I'm good. Right.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, it's not like that wouldn't be a naked sale for me. So, yeah, could
right.
I do that? Sure.
Yeah, I just find stuff like this, you know, this is all part of the same thing, which is that we live in a post-law world, okay?
Without a doubt.
And,
or post-enforcement world. We get all kinds of laws.
Well, but it's, yes. And the only, the people who get it jammed up their chute are the people who are disadvantaged in some way politically or whatever have you. Okay, I mean, you know, now today is the apparently the opening statements, and in Hunter's. By the way, I lied through my teeth when I said I wasn't addicted to drugs and I bought a gun. He's actually going on trial for that. Okay, well, guess what? I've signed those nice little what used to be called yellow forms, although they've actually been white for a very long time. And you have to sign a series of statements. You have to make a series of statements. You have to check boxes and such. And at the very bottom, just before you put your Hancock on it, it says, by the way, I understand that if I'm lying on this this piece of paper, it's a felony. I go to jail for this. And then they run it through the computer, and it either comes back approved or not approved or whatever have you. Now all of a sudden this is very interesting. But now they're trying him. If I lied on a government form like that, I would expect to be prosecuted. If I actually lied, okay, I wasn't, I didn't screw up on my tax filing or something like that. I tried to bilk somebody. They just, do you hear that SDNY, Southern District, New York, just went after Epoch Times, I think it was a CFO, supposedly embezzled $60-some million.
That's a lot.
And there are people running around saying, that's got to be politically motivated. Excuse me, if you stole $67 million, if you actually did, now I'm, assuming, it's an allegation, right? We don't know if it's true or not. You stole $67 million, don't you think you ought to go to jail?
Well, I do, except, it's not just to be argumentative for radio. We've reached the point, Carl, where I almost believe that here's what gets me to do this. I spend time with lawyers and judges a couple nights a week, and I hear all this crap. And one of the guys is representing, I mentioned this on the show before, is representing people who are getting investigated for the PPP loans.
Right.
And I go, well, how much did they steal? What do you mean? They never got any money.
Right.
I'm like, what do you mean they never got any money? Well, they applied, and then they filled out the stuff for the banks or whatever, and they never were approved. But there were lies on the statements, like you said, Sort of like, what was the one on the mattress? If you pull this tag off the mattress, you're going to jail or something?
Oh, yeah.
So, and I said, wait, look at this straight. We have people under our employ, the federal... Somehow we've missed the point here that the people who work for the government are our employees. They're the staff.
Right.
We're the board, the citizens, right? They're the staff. But they don't... So he goes, they're going after... I said, what about, like, some... Well, the ones I looked at were pretty obvious. There were some, organizations, let's say some religious organizations, that got all kinds of money and they had no employees.
Right.
Now, the way the sequence went, it seemed to me that if the, just by justice, oh God, why would you want to even use that word? By justice, they were throwing money out there. Okay, so if PTI applied for a PPP loan, and fibbed a little, which we didn't do, by the way, we didn't fib. We fibbed on the thing a little bit. We got the loan, let's say we just paid them back, because it was a loan. You and I know that, but for the listeners, you actually applied for a loan.
It was a loan. It wasn't a gift.
Right, and if you use the proceeds in the exact way they said you'd use them, you could then say, I did exactly what I was supposed to do. Here's the proof. Here's the W-2s for these people and the names and how much you paid each employee. If you did that, the loan was then forgiven.
Right.
But if somebody either paid the loan back or never got the money in the first place, maybe they're a sleazeball and maybe they need to go to the principal for a paddling or something. But to prosecute them? What are we doing? I don't get it. What a waste of time.
Yeah, there's so much of this kind of stuff that you just look at and you go, what in the blankety blank are you people up to here?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And it's... We have so much of this, and yet the real things that go on all the time that people actually get screwed by. All right. I mean, you know, the insanity that we live with today in the healthcare sector, for example, the ridiculous collusion that exists between insurance companies and regulators, not just in healthcare, but you know, take a look at automobiles. Yeah. Okay, you want to know why the truck is you know $100,000? Well, because the headlights are $2,000 a piece. Now go ahead and try to buy one that doesn't have those. Okay, well, that has the old you know $100 plastic housing.
Right, but we don't have much time. We'll talk more about it on Friday. But stick with your theme for a second on politically motivated. I mean, look at what's happening in Congress on both sides of the aisle regarding front running of stock. With the one lady,
yeah,
front running the one lady who's married to the head of the. What exchange is he?
Oh, just look at Pelosi and everybody else and how much money
they
made.
The lady who was the richest lady in Congress, she was appointed to the Senate, the blonde bombshell from Georgia, was married to the head of the, was it not the box exchange, one of those, the exchange that bought the NASDAQ, tells her name. Anyway, I mean, and she came out and sold her stock after a COVID meeting.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say right now that if you and I dropped in the Oval Office and we heard of such a thing, if we happen to be Democrats or Republicans, and she happens to be the other side of the aisle, it's been allowed to happen for so long. If we dragged her out in cuffs, there's no way that's not. I would immediately think politically motivated, immediately,
right.
Just because I mean, if I see somebody pull over to the side of the road, I go, "What did they do? They must have flipped the cop off."
Right.
I mean, it's at a point where just normal enforcement of laws, I don't see any of it. So when something actually happens, I go, how did that guy get himself, you know, in the in somebody's crosshairs?
Right.
I mean, it's reached that stage, I think. Anyway, we'll talk more about this on Friday. Buddy, have a good week and careful with your GameStop trades. You know. So you're not roaring kitty. What are you?
Not me. The only thing I'd like to do is eat the kitty.
What would our name be? Like Mighty Mouse or something, or Mighty Mouse?
Now watch out. That's a Disney thing.
Well, yeah. Be careful with that one. And we'd have to. Well, yeah, we have to come up with some. Well, roaring kitty is not anything. Yeah, I mean, who knows if the guy does anything? I could publish. I mean, good Lord, it's not like you're publishing your PTI statements out there, are you?
Well, you know, my question always in the world of the internet is, there's an old saying, goes back to when I used to run my company, is on the internet nobody knows you're a dog.
Right. Well, that's the truth. All right, we got a dash. We got Joel coming in. S&P futures down 23. NASDAQ futures down 71. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up down 20. NASDAQ futures down 60. We started yesterday down and we turn around on the close like we seem to have been doing. We recover every afternoon. Some combination of mutual fund buying, I guess, and buy the dip. Dow futures down 156. We got GameStop down 74 cents. Yesterday at this time it was 43. Now it's 27. I don't know how that worked out for a lot of people. Allegedly, the guy who started it all claims he still got all his stuff. I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I buy the fact that he had it in the first place. I mean, Europe, everything's down a little bit. DAX down 182. That's no more than a little bit. That's a full 1%. FTSE down 35.4%. CAC round down 54.7. Over in Asia, India stocks yesterday hit a record high. Today they went down 5%. So that's not good. Nikkei is only down 85 bucks, however, 0.2%. Hang Seng is actually up a little bit, 41.2%, 18,444. Shanghai up 12.4%, so mixed bag over in those Chinese markets. Yesterday, like I said earlier, S&P was up 5, NASDAQ up 93, Dow was down 115. That all happened like in the last 20 minutes. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.39. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.56. Japan down 4, 103. That's as low as they've been in a few weeks here. Oil, wow, get a load of this. Down $1.33, 72.89. So much for OPEC Plus. Oil was at 78 yesterday and it fell all during the day. Now today it's down 133. Brent down 121, 77.15. Natural gas up 4 cents, 279. RBOB down 2 cents, 230. Gold was up yesterday, coming right back down today. Down 21 bucks, 23.47. It's almost the exact amount it was up yesterday. Silver down 85 cents, 29.93. Hasn't been under 30 for a while. Copper down 9 cents, 4.56. We have U.S. dollar, same place, 108.6, and a British against the euro, and 127.6 against the British pound, almost exactly the same. And we have Bitcoin down 131, 68,965. Ricardo, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs and Sox couldn't lose. They didn't play.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 71 degrees Fahrenheit right now with a high of 81. Warm and humid with variable cloudiness. Widely separated thunderstorms this afternoon, which could bring damaging winds, flash flooding, and hail. We have a low of 68 degrees here in Chicago today. Over in Phoenix, we got 77 degrees right now with a high of 103. Partly sunny and very, very warm. Tonight will be clear with a low of 78 degrees. Air quality is poor and there is an excessive heat warning, so beware of that. Make sure you're staying hydrated. On the traffic in Chicago, we got inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 21 minutes. Inbound Innes from Lane Cook is 46 minutes. You're looking at 33 minutes inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Dan Ryan from 95th is 21 minutes. And inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 28 minutes. On to sports. In the MLB yesterday, the Diamondbacks beat the Giants 4-2 in Arizona. And today we got the White Sox playing the Cubs tonight at Wrigley Field in Chicago at 7:05 p.m. And just a quick disclaimer, just a quick promo. Don't forget to stay tuned for the NBA Finals this Thursday, June 6th. The Dallas Mavericks play the Boston Celtics in Boston at 7:30 p.m. So beware of that. And that's all I got for you, Chief.
Do we have Mr. Joel?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, good morning, Chief. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. I understand you sold 20,000 GameStop at 47 the other night.
I think it was 47 and a quarter.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
Showing your age with a quarter.
I'm sorry about that. 0.25.
0.25, yeah.
0.2499.8678432 1.
Yeah, it's unreal, huh? So yeah, how are you?
I'm doing good. I just looked at this crude oil market and holy mackerel. I mean, you mentioned it was kissing 78 yesterday, a couple days ago. It was over 80 bucks last week. Time for OPEC to do something, huh?
They did. That's why we went to 80. It's been stuck at 78, 78 and a half. You know, I give the thing every morning, although it moves in afterward during the day. It's been that high 70s for forever, and all of a sudden OPEC came out. I'm sorry, OPEC Plus. It's OPEC Plus,
yes,
Russia.
Yeah.
So they came out and said they're going to maintain their supply cuts for the next 18 months when they're supposed to stop them, what, 6 months or something. But the thing runs up like a buck and a half. Everybody's all worried about it, and then it immediately got obliterated. Those supply cuts, we've increased our production here by more than a million barrels a day while they were doing the supply cuts. They're out of their mind. They're not doing anything.
Correct. We go on the, the whole, is the economy slowing down? What the Fed doing, what they're not going to do. I mean, This is a pretty, this is a good indication here, is it? I mean, it's great for inflation, right? The components of inflation. But man, you know, are people traveling less? Are airlines, you know, using less fuel? I mean, it, you know, it's something to take note of here. But I'm going to look at it from the glass half full perspective and say, hey, this is great. This is great for inflation. How it, you know, what implications it has for the remainder of the, you know, the U.S. economy remains to be seen. So that's my take on oil there. And boy, is this a yo-yo market or what? Or what, Chief? I mean, come on, that dip yesterday. Well, first of all, Friday. I mean, I was recovering from whiplash on Friday from that last hour move. Then yesterday, they try and crank it again. They bring it all the way back again, and now we're down this morning. I mean, yeah, you could blame the elections in India if you want, but holy mackerel, instability in the market. That's something I don't like, Chief. I'd rather us sit and go nowhere than have these kind of fluctuations. To me, that's not a great... a great thing for the market when you have this kind of volatility.
I would agree. As you know, I'm usually, you know, talking to people about their portfolios, and even not. I mean, I never bring it up too much, but I for years, Joel, I've talked about, you know, I think you started about the same time I did. I remember what the world was like before the rally started in August of '82, mm-hmm. and everybody was making 15%. Give or take, on their money at the savings and loan or the bank or the hell you were, and nobody was in the market. I mean, from market not going anywhere from 1969 mm-hmm. to 1981, really. I mean, it was unchanged, and then from 81 to early 82, when the interest rates already started to come down, the market went down another 20% while the rates were already starting to come down, and you could not, if you'd have walked into any kind of a social setting, a cocktail party, and you said, you know, I think there's a change coming. I'm going to go trade in my CDs, and I'm going to go buy some stock. If you could even find a broker, they would have tossed you out. They would have cut you off at the bar for sure. And right now, everybody is trading the last two or three markets. Everybody's done really well with it. Anybody who's just put their money in someplace, let yourself be long for a while. But the interest rates, they've gone up. So many stocks are incredibly high historically. Doesn't mean that, you know, they can't go higher.
Correct.
And yet, you try and talk to somebody, okay, you've been riding this horse for 5 years. You've made more money than you ever dreamed you're going to make. At 80 years old, do you really want to be 95% long? You know, whatever you want to call it, high-tech stocks. Well, what do you mean? These stocks have made all this money. The trick is not to make it; it's to keep it. You couldn't. It's all of a sudden. It's like everybody's a little kid. They put their hands over their ears and go, "And I don't want to hear you." It's not that I'm preaching. I'm just saying the world is different. It's the market is different every day, but it's clearly different now than it was 3 years ago.
Correct.
Even in retro.
Correct.
And yet, nobody. I just don't want all these people that are my friends and listeners. If we do correct, there's all kinds of people who are talking about 30-40% correction, and I don't buy that stuff necessarily, because everybody's got a, you know, if somebody says it's going down 30%, if you and I want news, we got to say it's going down 35. The fact is, if it drops 40%, it's really only going back to what it was a few years ago. And most of these companies aren't making much more than they did then, so it's not like it couldn't happen. You know, I mean, but I don't understand why people. By the way, I got this thing up here. I just brought this up, Joel. I have it at the ready now. In the time that OPEC has been screwing around with this million barrel a day cut, let's say what, from the beginning of the end of 2022, somewhere in there is when they started this.
Mm-hmm.
They're 1 million cut a day. We're up from 12.1 million barrels a day to 13.1 just here. And I have to believe some of the places like Libya and those people are all up. They're all up too.
Yeah.
I mean, correct. So OPEC is, what percentage are they of the market now? 15, 20? Maybe. But with Russia, they're probably a little more than that. I mean, they're not like they're 70 or 60 or something like they think they were or used to be.
No, that's correct. I mean, yeah, we'll see. I mean, this is the lowest level been in quite some time for crude. We'll see if they come out with some more cuts. 70 is a key level. That's been the lowest. That was the lowest back in February. As far as people's long-term perspectives on the market and investors like that, Chief, they don't care until the market goes down.
Right.
And then they'll say, well, Chief, why didn't you warn me about?
Yeah, or can you help me now? No, how am I going to help you now? I still have vivid memories of that seminar at in Brooklyn of all places. This is before Brooklyn was a good place to go. This is back in 2000, Joel, and Dr. J, of course, double books, right? And I was there to meet a client, and he goes, "Ah, hey, geez, you're not doing anything tomorrow morning like 6, are you?" And I go, "Well, no." By the way, I got this seminar in Brooklyn I booked and I can't make it. How would you like to? I said, the thing starts at 6. Well, no, 6:30. Like, all right. So somehow, it's pretty easy to get from Manhattan to Brooklyn. You just hop on some train. I was there.
Oh, yeah.
I was there in like 8 minutes or something. I pile out. Anyway, these guys, the theme was supposed to be repair strategies. And, okay, so everybody in the room had Cisco. And I'm like, oh, God, I didn't want to ask this. What price did you buy it? 45, 50, 55. Well, what did Cisco top out at? 66. I think it's trading 6.25, like plain 6.25. And I go, well, that's going to take more than like one repair strategy. I don't know
total reconstruction. No, yeah. You know what? I got to hop 1 second. I just want to make one final point, and just to what you alluded to, and what we do, and being in the financial media, there's a lot of different people out there saying a lot of different things. The most important thing is, where are you at in your, in your timeline? Where are you at? You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you can assume the market's going to do what it's going to do, but boy, oh boy, how long have you been in the market? What were your original goals? What, where do you want to be? If you're fortunate enough, do you want to leave some things to your family? So that's the most important point, Chief. So I'm gonna hop. I'll leave with my Go Blue.
There you go.
And we'll be talking soon. Thanks, Chief. Thanks for having me today.
Ricardo, can we go right to Kenny?
Yes, we do.
Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm hanging here. We had our college reunion last weekend. It was pretty interesting.
Nice. When did you go to school?
I went to Notre Dame. They're big on these reunions.
Were you there when Jeff Kilburg was there? No, probably not, right? He was there after you, I bet.
A little bit after. He was second or third string tight end, wasn't he?
Yes, I believe so.
I was actually sitting across from, I'm going to say not the best, but probably the best tight end we ever had. Dave Casper was there at the reunion.
Ah, nice. Did you have a good... Wait, how many years for you?
50.
Wow. Wow. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Did you have a good time?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't do... I'm not big on all the festivities, but we have a group that has been pretty tight, like 10 or 11 of us that played ball the whole way through, and we were really hung together. And not the only, because we miss him. But you remember Bob Golden. He's been on the show a long time. He's the only one who's passed.
Yeah,
everybody else is in pretty good shape. I mean, which is pretty good, pretty good. And the best line, though, Kenny, there's a bar. I mentioned this yesterday, but you'll love this. There's a bar in Michigan. Indiana was dry on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So there's a bar in Michigan that literally, I think the parking lot is in Indiana and the bar is in Michigan.
Yeah.
So we would drive up there. It's about 8 miles. And Sunday nights, if you wanted to get a drink. But Sunday night was a polka night.
Yeah,
they had all these, I'm going to say at the time, older Polish ladies. And Kenny, Kenny, if you went there, I'm just telling you, bud, you're dancing, because they come and grab you by the shirt and drag you out of the seat because they're there to dance. And if they tired their guys out, they didn't care. They'd teach you to polka. They were serious about it. So you end up doing that, and pitchers are like a buck and a half for a pitcher, that kind of stuff. So the guy at our little speech the other night, the guy goes, imagine you're like 15 years older than the old girls at Kubiak's. Everybody's like, oh, God. But it's the truth, right?
Yeah.
They were older, though. We're like older than them.
Remind me to ask you something before we get off today, because I need some direction. If I go out to the RNC convention in Milwaukee in July, There's no, it's completely sold out, so I can't stay in Milwaukee. So I need to stay someplace else. But Chicago's too far away, right? It's like an hour and a half from Milwaukee.
Yeah. It's an hour and a half. It's a crummy drive.
So if I had to stay somewhere in between, like what town, where would you suggest I look for a hotel?
Well, you could, if you stayed, you know, like north of O'Hare, now you're down to an hour.
Okay, but where, so where would that be? Like what part of the, what should I be looking for? What towns would I be looking at?
Well, anywhere, I mean, anywhere, well, I don't know if there's anything nice in Kenosha. Kenosha's not bad either. There's some hotels there that are decent.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look because yeah, I was...
Well, you know, anything up by, like the, I'll look because there's like a Bass Pro Shop thing up way up in Illinois that they're, you know, they're an hour away. How could a guy like you? I thought you'd have a skybox alone getting shut out.
No, well, they asked me to go on Maria's show with her live from the RNC convention one day during that week. So I think it would be pretty cool because, look, when am I ever going to go to an RNC convention or a DNC convention, by the way? It could be either way, right? I think, I think it's kind of, I think it'd be kind of a very interesting opportunity to do it. So I just have to figure out a place to stay, right? Because I can't stay. There's nothing in Milwaukee.
No,
and so I got to. I'm not familiar with the area, so I'm trying.
Well, you could stay. God, you know, you wouldn't mind staying if you went a little further north.
Yeah,
you could stay at like the Kohler or something. That place is gorgeous.
Where is that north of Milwaukee?
Yeah, I mean, not very far though. You know, 20 miles maybe, Sheboygan.
In Sheboygan, okay. And do you, but so then I wouldn't. I would fly into Milwaukee, not Chicago.
Yeah, you rent a car. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'll bet you'd be hanging with all the big shots there. That's an incredible place.
Well, what's the name of the place?
The Kohler. That's where like the golf courses are, the Irish and Whistling Straits and the river and it's unbelievable.
Okay, so there. I just made some notes. So after we hang up,
we'll talk more about. By the way, I went to the Democratic Convention last time I was here in Chicago.
Did you? Yeah, I mean, I've never been to one.
I don't know about this one. There might be some riots and stuff, but that one, was pretty. That's when Barack Obama gave the final speech. But Kenny, it's unreal. Talk about the world. Of course, I went with Duke Chapman and Chuck Henry and Bill Florsch, and I was I was on the board, and I went with those four. It was the four of us that went, like the four musketeers, right? Although it was supposed to be three musketeers, and all the lobbyist places have like tents down on the main floor, down on the floor, where they all have skyboxes. So yep. We were big shots, I mean, sort of. So our guy, remember Tommy Boggs? Ever hear that name?
No.
Well, remember Hale Boggs?
Yeah.
And well, the son is Tommy Boggs, and he was one of the biggest lobbyists forever. I think he passed. He was with Patton Boggs and Blow was the name of the firm, and the SIBO used those guys forever as our lobbyists. So they had a big tent. You know, the best chow, the best, you know, the best booze. Well, his sister was Cokie Roberts.
No kidding.
Yeah, never used the last name. Well, I mean, she must have got married, obviously. And So, but then we went to somebody else's skybox, and the big law firm had a place. And yet the people sitting in the stands look like they're there for a basketball game. They're in, like, regular shirts, and you know, and all of a sudden, you know, the great state of Iowa, and there's about 50 guys, from the state of Iowa drinking a beer that they're paying for. It's like you're going to a sporting event with the rabble, with the haves and the have-nots. And all the big shots are in skyboxes and the tents, and all the regular delegates are just there like they're at a ball game. I wonder if the Republican one's going to be the same way. Probably.
Well, I don't know. I've never been to one, so I'm going to find out.
But you would not believe what they do to the place. I mean, the United Center is big. But they had, I mean, Kenny, there were spots where you had to walk over literally, you know, those big things they put over wires?
Uh-huh.
You know, like if there's a wire coming into a park or something for a concert, there'll be a, with that thing that you roll over so you don't trip over it. Some of those things, I've never seen one of those things bigger than that. These cables are like 4 inches wide. The amount of power and stuff, they took whole sections of stands out just to run wires and stuff down to the floor. It was unbelievable.
Of course. Let me ask a question. How far is Sheboygan from Milwaukee? Looks like it's about 40 minutes.
Probably not even. I'll get to the map afterward, and we'll confer. But
I'm looking at
We'll find you a place. We always do. Kevin's helping us out. Sheboygan is an hour past Milwaukee.
Oh, Madison's probably closer, right?
No, Madison's pretty far across.
Oh, is it? Is it?
We'll do that. I used to be very familiar with the area. I'll find a good spot for you. But how many days are you actually going to stay? Just the one or one night?
Probably I'll go out there Monday, be on Tuesday, and come home on Wednesday, because I have to come back to Florida for Wednesday because I got some stuff going on here in terms of you know, my own personal situation. That, yeah. You know.
Hey, you so sound, you sound pretty good, bud.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I feel good. I mean, I feel good. Everything is good. So,
do you feel even better that you sold 20,000 shares of GameStop at 47, honestly?
Okay. Can we talk about that for a minute? So, because they were talking all about it yesterday, right? So, this guy now comes out, little kitty, or roaring kitty, whatever his name is.
Roaring kitty, not out, little kitty, for God's sake.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But he puts out his positioning, makes everyone, now he owns, you know, another 12 million shares via options and blah, blah, blah. And he's got a $21, basically $21.27 average cost or something like that. The thing opens at 43. It's up 100%. So people jump in there yesterday. Now they're buying it at 43, right? Because they're all excited. And look where it closed last night, 28 or something.
Yeah.
It closed up 2 or 3 points. And so now all the people buying it at 43 are screaming and yelling. Okay, well, what do you expect? Why'd you jump in and buy it? Because this guy showed you his position. Okay, great. How do you know he wasn't selling it to you at 43, up 100%? I mean, are you kidding?
Well,
they're all saying, wait, I'm getting hosed. Well, guess what? You got to have to know what you're doing.
All right, so you are more conversant with today's, how the stuff actually trades overnight than I do. We don't do a lot of that. I mean, we have some people that do it through our IB platform, but they're sort of on their own. What is the makeup of, if all of a sudden this thing starts to run and I've got a big short position, why would I even be looking at it on a Sunday night? I have no idea, but I suppose somebody is. I mean, brokerage firm's not going to call you and say cover your short, are they? I mean, in the middle of the night.
No. But what ends up happening is like these meme stocks, like Jim and everything, it's all over Discourse and Reddit and all these sites that all these people that are just focused on the trading, they're looking at it 24 hours a day, in the middle of the night, on the weekend, Saturday, what's it do, blah, blah, because it's 24 hours, it never stops. And so, you know, that and he put out that message, I guess, on Sunday night, and that's what happened. You saw yesterday morning, the thing was trading up at $43, and now E-Trade, apparently, I think, came up this morning and said they're thinking about banning him from the, because he bought all those options on E-Trade, I guess. And so they're thinking about banning him because they're talking about, you know, he's manipulative of the markets and, you know, I can see how people can see he's manipulating his own position. And how do you know he wasn't selling stock yesterday when it was trading up 100%, right? He's got a huge position. He makes one comment, it's up 100%. You're telling me he's just sitting there not doing anything?
Well,
maybe he didn't. Right. Maybe he didn't.
If you have a minute, we have a couple minutes. Give me how this actually works. Okay, this thing comes out, stock's trading, let's say 25, pick a number.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm foolish enough to just be sitting short something forever, like some of these guys do, it appears, I don't know why you do, but you do. Yeah. So all of a sudden, I'm short 10,000 shares of this stuff. Well, first of all, I'm not on Reddit and this other stuff. I'm not going to get a call from my broker. Who's the guy who's forced to put the 10,000 share market order buy-in at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. I mean, who's that guy? And then everybody just gets out of the way, and all of a sudden the guy's filled $15 higher, and he's going, "What the bleep?" How does the dynamic even start?
I'm not sure that anyone's forced to cover it. You know, if you're now because you're talking just about from the short side. But what if you're just a young kid that's going, "Oh my, who wants to get long the stock?" Right? Either way, but if you're short the stock, I'm not saying that anyone's forcing you to cover it, but when you get up on Monday morning and you see what it's done and it's up 100%, you're going to make a decision. You're going to short more. You're going to cover some.
Right.
You're going to do whatever. You're going to make a decision to do something, right? Because the thing did open at 43. It did open up 100%. Now, it didn't close there, but it did all the excitement in the pre-market and during the day. And then they talked about it all morning across every CNBC and Fox. They were all talking about, look at GameStop, look at Roaring Kitty, and look at this, look at that. And so they helped to fuel that advance, in my opinion. And then if you're short and you cover it up and then the thing collapses, I mean, again, you got to know what you're doing. You have to understand your risk. I'm not even sure why as a money manager you're even playing in that.
Well, I mean, if I had somebody ridiculous. Who was you know, whatever, I won't say knew something or whatever. If somebody's long 300 or 400 contracts of a call option at the 20s, I would probably, knowing how crazy this thing is,
I would probably say that we, you know, we'll make an exception for you, and we'll offer the stuff overnight at $40. Hope we get clipped because we're long the calls. We're fine.
Right. Right.
But I guess I'm saying, Kenny, you and I could give a backpack of two of us would get a terrific lecture one day on what a specialist responsibilities and advantages a specialist used to have.
He
used to have both. It was
And so
he made the market, but he could see there was a book, there were standing orders, there was things that were to his advantage and things that weren't because he had to make a market, which is, you know, right. Which is kind of hard to do. All right, so who exactly at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, who exactly is the specialist? I mean, what is
There isn't.
I know, but
there isn't anyone that the specialist that controls it the way it used to be controlled. Not controlled, but the way it used to work, right? There is no specialist. It is just the market participant because overnight, it's a completely electronic marketplace. So it is just natural supply and demand coming together. There's nobody defining it. There's nobody saying, whoa, 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 this is way out of line. I'm going to sell it down here because it's way out of line. It's not. It goes completely automated because that's what they wanted.
Somebody in that group, going to say, make a market. If you ask me to do it, if the closing price was 25, I'd be 24, 26, 500 up. And all of a sudden, people started buying, I just pull everything.
Correct. You might be 24, 26 until you realize that this guy posts his position on Reddit or Discourse and now creates all this excitement. All of a sudden, 25, 24, 26 doesn't make sense anymore. Suddenly, you make it 30, 50, and you see what happens, or 40, 50, or 30, 45, whatever the number is. You make a really wide market to see, okay, when's it going to come down? If you start getting taken at 45, that's not the right price right then, right? Then you move up to 50.
But there's no – the man has nothing behind him. I mean, even if I were to say, you know, I was going to put 10,000 shares in because my client has 100 calls, and he says, if this ever gets crazy, I'd like to sell it there. This guy or girl, whoever's trying to make a market, he doesn't have the advantage of my order at 40 that he can lean on. He has nothing.
Agreed, which is why it becomes much more volatile in the pre- and post-markets, because that's right. There is nobody there that's charged with maintaining the order flow. It's just it's like the Wild West, which is why you see such dramatic moves post or pre and on names like, look at that, in the meme names, right? Now, I would say names like when news comes out in Apple or Nvidia, right? That's much more, I mean, because so many institutions are involved in those names that there's much more liquidity. But like on these meme stocks, there's less liquidity and much more volatility, which is why you really have to understand your risk, and you can't go blaming anybody if you decide this thing is crazy, I'm going to buy it at 40, and suddenly it opens at 40 and it collapses at 28, and then you start stamping your feet, going, whoa, 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 I got hosed. No, you didn't. No, you did not get hosed. That's the risk in the market. You need to understand it.
Kenny,
I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for people that do that. Right? They buy it at 40 and then they cry when it closes at 28 and go, I got hosed. No, you didn't. No, you did not.
Kenny, Kevin says, Hotel Verdant in Racine. You might even be able to fly into Racine.
Oh, Racine. Okay. Hotel Verdant.
Hey, what the hell? I want to ask you, I definitely want to watch you. What time are you going to be on with Maria?
I think it's going to be Tuesday, whatever that Tuesday is, the 16th of July, I think is the Tuesday.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll see. You know, I got to just get out there. But yes, I believe it's Tuesday the 16th from it's 6 to 9, but out there it would be, I guess, 5 to 8.
I got one more tidbit for you. My water heater, my big one for the three apartments, conks out, right? So I have my plumber come over. Yeah. Maybe the first thing the guy says to me.
What?
Chief, what AI stock should I buy?
Top of the market.
I'm like, he goes, come on, which one should I buy? You know they're all going up. I said, well, they all sort of already have gone up.
Right.
You might be on time, but you might be a little late. I don't know. But
somebody asked me yesterday about SCMI. They wanted to know because it's SCMI is, you know, that was the one that was, you know, it was $100 stock and became an $800 stock overnight. And now it's backed off, apparently. I didn't even look at it.
Well, it's 762. It's down 850. SMCI.
Where's it trading? 762.
Yeah.
Right? But it's down from, was it trading at 1,000 2 weeks ago?
Something like that, yeah. And it dropped dramatically from there one day. Wasn't that like $300 in one day or something?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. So he asked him, what's that? It's, yeah, and I don't know why, because I haven't paid attention to it. It's not a name that I own, but I hadn't really paid attention to it, but I haven't really sure. Yeah, it was trading at $1,200 in March, and now it's trading at $770, right? It traded as low as almost $700 back in early April.
We got a few guys in that trade through our IB platform. That, you know, they do all the trading themselves, and
yeah,
they love trading this thing and NVIDIA. It's like, I would hesitate to call it investing, Kenny.
Well, I don't think that's right, and that's okay if you want to day trade. Yeah, do your thing. I don't think that's investing. I think that's just day trading.
Yeah, and it's
I don't view that as investing.
It's, you know, the rush is such that, Kenny, if I were to tell these guys that, you know, I read Friday's paper, and yes, I can show you a nice spread you can do for like a half a buck,
yeah,
and I guarantee you, which I could never do, I guarantee you on Friday it's going to trade a buck. So why don't you just do it 100 times and go play golf? They would have no interest. There's not enough action.
Right.
They would have no
interest. Not enough action at all.
You know, and to me, I'm going, that's the beauty of it. If I can put a little bit of somebody's money in, you know, somewhere and actually like double it in 3 or 4 days, even if I pay 30 cents and sell it for 60, I'm happy as a clam. They want no part of that. Not enough action.
Why would they?
You know,
it's not exciting enough.
No. I tell you what, all those days in the OEX pit, when it was exciting, I tell you what, you better, but that was the A-list of people that could take that excitement. I mean, there were very few people. Most retail traders think they can. Kenny, that takes years to be able to do that.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
And even then, you think about is, then I'll let you go. Isn't it amazing that when you've actually been a market maker, every time you do a trade, you figure the other guy's right. Yet every retail client is absolutely convinced every time they do a trade, they're right and the other guy's wrong.
Isn't that always the truth?
Isn't that always the truth? I mean, I've given seminars where I say, okay, when you buy a stock, say you buy 1,000 shares of GE, who are you buying it from? And guys go, oh, I just bought it. Oh, I just bought it at the market. No. Who did you buy it from? What do you mean? I said, well, you're coming through PTI. You bought 1,000 shares of GE. Who's on the other side of the trade? They look at you like they got four heads. And I said, there's some guy from Merrill Lynch or Schwab or somebody who's done his homework as well, or maybe he just died. Who knows? But he's selling you the GE. What makes you think you're smarter than he is this minute? They have no idea what you're talking about.
That's right. No, I hear you.
And yet, very well be smarter than you that minute, right?
Yeah, he very well could be. So look at him. Look it up, the Hotel Verdun right now. Looks like a nice place. So I'm going to call there and see if I get a space, see if I can get a room.
Kevin digs you. He's not about to put you in some dump.
Wait, but so I would fly into the Milwaukee.
Yeah, or he says, I think he says, I think Racine has an airport, but I don't know what kind of plane's going there.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah,
or you could maybe, plus it's not that far from O'Hare. So if you want
to. Oh, it is. So maybe I'd fly in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm going to say O'Hare to Milwaukee is 80 miles.
Yeah. Yeah, I checked it out on Google. It's like an hour and 40 minutes to go between Chicago. But if I fly to Chicago and then go to Racine, that's probably half the trip.
Right. You know, at least half.
Yeah. All right, listen.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you next week. SP Futures down 22, NASDAQ Futures down 71. Be right back with the Professor Helsner.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 24. NASDAQ Futures down 81. Do we have the professor?
Hey, Tom. What's up?
How are you, buddy?
Doing well.
We're just, Joel got me on this oil thing. We're looking at the oil prices and oil production. And, I mean, in one man's opinion, the this all started with 1973 with OPEC and how they were the big bear in the woods. And now I don't think they're much of the big bear. But I don't think those guys. And Joel kind of forced me to, I wasn't planning on talking about oil production today, but isn't it startling sometimes when you look at the actual numbers and how different they are from the political spin? I mean, it's,
oh yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, for those that don't know, I mean, and I know if you talk to most people on the Republican side of the aisle, or I'll say conservative side of the aisle, it's, you know, this government is absolutely burying oil production, and look what we're doing, we're screwing everybody, and blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't that talk. There sure as hell is. And there's some stuff that's going on, and you look at what's going on in California, it's a little weird, where they want everybody to run electric cars, yet they don't want any electricity production, which kind of makes you wonder what their mentality is.
Even with pushed electric vehicles, I was reading an article about when you get an accident with those cars, the insurance companies just total them. Because if the battery's damaged at all, there's this risk of explosion. So they just total a car that's been in an accident. They don't fix it. And that's one reason why I think car insurance prices are on the rise. So there is a push toward electric vehicles, but you know, gasoline production, crude oil production is up. It's higher than a previous peak. So I think that goes to show you who's really running the show.
Well, these numbers, I mean, the listeners are gonna. I'm reading this from the chart here, so I'm not giving it a political spin on this.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna say I'll pick one here. The last year, at the end of the year, we were in 2005. We were 4988 million barrels a day. So say 5 mil. Right, and by 2010, we were up to 5.6. Okay, 2015 we're 9.2. 2020 we're 11.1, and now we're 13.2.
Yeah.
So we had a little bit of a pause when the COVID happened, because I won't say because of the Trump administration, but it was actually increasing pretty much. During the Obama administration.
Yeah, it was on a pretty good clip.
Yeah, it was on a glide path.
Yeah, and now from Obama through Trump, yeah.
Yeah, and then it paused some, because we went from, this would be expected, we went from 12,980, so say 13, in 2019 down to 11,1, and we've come back all of that. So now we're higher than we were in 2019. So we basically picked up the Trump/Obama glide path. And you know, and all these, what these guys talk about, it's totally different than what they're actually doing half the time. I mean, I had some people, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, we were having a beer, and a guy goes, oh, geez, you know, they've buried this thing with that pipeline. And I go, the pipeline had nothing to do with any oil production here. It was Canadian tar sands oil going to a refinery or two down in somewhere south. They used to get all this Venezuelan sandy oil and aren't anymore. It had nothing to do. It wasn't going to land here at the refineries here in Illinois. What would they do with that crap? Because refineries are pretty much designed for a certain type of oil, right? There's some flexibility, but not very much.
Yeah.
And so look at all the federal lands. I go, there's so many federal lands that are leased to oil companies that have never, will never, ever have they'll be drilled. They're 100 zillion miles from a pipeline or a road or anything. So you could cut 20% of your federal lands, appease the tree huggers, and it won't make any difference to anything.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that I see is the world that we don't observe. In the world that I observe, but nobody else can, I imagine a world. Yeah, I'm watching this show called Dark Tower on Apple TV, and the scientists built this box that when you enter it, you can go through these infinite many doorways. And every one of the doorways is a different version of the universe. It's really fascinating. So when I try
so
to
like a maze.
Yeah, it's just one big long corridor, right? And how you feel at the moment you're pulling the door open is going to reflect on the reality you're going to see once you open the door. It's really fascinating. Joel Edgerton's in it. It's just really cool. But the world I see, that I envision, is, and a lot of people don't see this, and it took me a while to get to the point where I see this. The rules and regulations that government puts in place are protections for those oil fields that have been drilled and are running, you know, maybe they're halfway drained, maybe they're a quarter of the way drained, but those rules and regulations are intended to keep those types of wells profitable. Because if they had a market system, you know, entrepreneurship can, you know, poke a hole and drill, then it would make those established old wells unprofitable. So that's the world I see, right? And that's the problem with economic policy. Economic policy, we don't get to see the world that would have existed had this policy not been put in place. We have to just imagine it.
Well, the people, whether you're a Mr. Conspiracy Theory or not, whether or not you can just stuff $20,000 in somebody's back pocket and he does what you ask him to do.
Yeah.
That isn't, let's put it this way. Let's go back to one of my best friends. His sister marries this guy, and a real nice guy, and he worked for Allstate Insurance. And he was, we're talking, you know, decades ago, that the dude was, I'll use the term lobbyist. And I said, well, so that immediately had a bad connotation, even though I was young. And he said, you know, it depends on how you think about it. He says, Allstate contributes. He said, you know, I guess, and he's this guy, he's a salt of the earth, so he wasn't some crook or anything like that. He says, you know, what it means is, to me, if there's some bill and some goofball writes something into the bill that is damaging, they're just damaging to our industry, not, you know, whatever. I mean, you can take that however you want to define it. He said, it allows me access to his office and at least talk to one of his higher-end staffers, if not him himself. Maybe we go to breakfast, we go for coffee, but they're usually pretty busy. And I just explained to them, whatever somebody wrote in here and how damaging it is to our industry, he goes, most of the time they never even read it. They don't even know what's in there. Yeah. So I prefer to think that most of my job is educational and not arm twisting or saying, well, you know, we're going to drop your, we're not going to contribute next time if you don't do it. He goes, that's not what I'm about. And he wasn't. He wasn't that kind of a guy. But, you know, Now who knows what. But he said, this stuff is flying by these guys. If you're not representing your interests and you don't have the ability to be heard, you're screwed.
I mean, well, that's exactly why the bottom 50% of Americans are screwed.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I just looked at the M2, and I put a pre-pandemic trend to it, and I posted a Twitter. It's 17% greater than the pre-pandemic trend at this moment. And if you do a year-over-year from pre-pandemic trend, you know, from the pre-pandemic trend that I posted on Twitter of last year to this year and use this year's M2, is 20%. So you can't tell me that the Fed is not inflating, even though interest rates are at 17-year highs. So this is how the bottom half of the country gets screwed. It really is, because they don't have the money to lobby Congress. Only the incumbent firms, the big, huge incumbent firms, the powerful people can lobby Congress, and that's who they represent. When we went away from the states nominating and putting in place the senators for the state, when we 86'd that with an amendment, I forget the number, all these senators became senators of the United States, not senators of the people in the state that they represent.
Well, yeah.
And it's just been a big money game. Whoever has the most money gets to have the policy twisted in their favor.
Well, they dropped, the money supply was dropping from 23 down to 20. Now, this is the monthly number you get. So we used to get it weekly.
Yeah.
So this is BS to start with. But the last 2 months, it's been a pretty stout gain in money supply.
It's gaining from its current trend. But if you look at it from a pre-pandemic trend perspective, it's up 17%.
Right, but I'm saying from February of 20.7 to now of 20.85, it's moving up pretty good when they're supposed to be fighting inflation.
And if you extend the pre-pandemic trend,
so you're going back 5 years
to the current month.
Are you going back 5 or 10?
$18 trillion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean,
it's 17% above that pre-pandemic trend. So the Fed has never stopped inflating.
No,
in my opinion, it just made a bunch of cash, and it's just a matter of how much is sloshing around, right?
Well, plus they're giddy that China and Japan are putting money in their systems.
Oh yeah, yeah, they love it too, right? Yeah.
So if
you're the least inflationary central bank, that's good for you, right?
Well, but I mean, that money finds its way over here.
Yeah, I know. Yep.
What'd you make of Japan? I mean, maybe you can explain this better than I did. Japan allegedly spending $60 billion they're going to say stabilize their currency. I'm going to say manipulate their currency. Boy, I thought people realized 20 years ago that was useless waste of dough for these countries. They still do it?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you think Japan's manipulating the currency, I'm sure Japan thinks we're manipulating the currency. I'm sure China thinks we're manipulating the currency, right? When Trump said China's a currency manipulator, I'm thinking to myself, well, China's just trying to keep up with the U.S.
China pegged theirs at a dollar.
They're just trying to keep up with the U.S.'s with the U.S., man. So, you know, to me, the problem is the central bank, and the central bank is the enabler of these huge, massive fiscal deficits we have, and this massive federal debt. And you look at the 10-year treasury yields. It's just on a trend that's pretty stable. There's a little noise, but it's just marching forward. And what's going on is there's so many bonds that Treasury has to supply, and the demand can't keep up with it. So do we really think that interest rates are going to return to where they were? I don't think so. I don't think interest rates are headed anywhere near 3% again.
I think they're going totally the opposite direction.
We're stuck with it. And they might get worse.
I think they're going to
get
worse.
Actually, might get worse.
I could see the 10-year at 7 or 8 easy.
Yeah, I can't do it. I mean, it's just marching upward, man.
I don't... you wonder how they... I mean, Japan has... The central bank owns 40% of all their debt.
Don't they? They also buy stock too, don't they?
They were buying the ETFs for a while. Mm. They're buying individual stocks. They're buying the same thing.
Yeah.
If you buy the ETFs, the guy who runs the ETF.
If demand increases for ETF, then demand's going to increase for stocks, right? So indirectly, it doesn't matter. Intent doesn't matter, right?
Well, you gave me a good opportunity to explain at least how the ETFs used to work is if somebody starts buying the spiders, okay, which is the original ETF. It's the S&P 500. So let's use that one. If somebody starts buying them, there was a specialist on the, I think he was on the American Stock Exchange, which is no more, but I'm not so sure who the guy is now, but it was that person's job if you and I started buying spiders from him. Okay, now obviously his hedge is to buy all the stocks and the spiders. Okay, right? So you buy all 500 stocks and the spiders at a certain ratio. And then what he would turn around and do is I'll use the term donate. He'd gift that stock to State Street Bank, and State Street Bank would issue him more spiders.
Hmm.
So State Street Bank would the specialists, I think, did all the work. They would go, here you go. Here's your basket of 500 stocks worth, you know, over many million dollars. And then they would say, okay, that gets you 20,000 spiders. Well, now you now have. So but now the State Street Bank is supposed to have, and I believe they do, I mean, I don't have no reason not to believe them, actually have all the stock in their vault, electronic vault, of all the spiders that are out there. So that's why when the dividend checks go, a lot of dividend checks go to State Street Bank, and if you got a certain amount of spiders, you're going to get the dividend, right? So so where they make their money, this is even weirder, where they make their money, there is a very, very slight fee, I think, but they actually made their money on the float on the dividends. That's why people wanted to get in there, because, you know, their dividend rate used to be, you know, halfway decent. So they would get the dividend checks for the entire quarter, and they'd pay you quarterly. Well, they got the float on all that money until they actually had to pay you.
Well,
So now, but now, you know, then the interest rate, there was no much, not much float. Although, if you're doing credit cards, there's a lot of float, right? It's 20%.
Yep.
So that's how they make their dough. So in other words, do the math. If the dividends is say $20 million, they're coming in over the whole 90 days. So let's say, on average, they have $10 million sitting in a bank for what, 45 days, right? So
yeah.
So they're going to get the interest on $10 million for 45 days. Well, it's way more than $10 million, and that's part of the grift of being the people who do the spiders.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad, you know, most people say that's fair.
That's a good gig. Yeah.
But I'm saying it's fair for you. I mean, if you own the spiders, you get paid once a quarter. It's not like it's, you know, instead you get a, you know, $500 dividend. Should it be, you know, 502 probably, you know, if you were getting it every day, but it's not that much of a fee, is it?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you want your $2. I know you, but you know.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get it because you didn't go do all 500 stocks yourself. They did it for you. There's always a little fee for something, right? They got to wet their beak.
It just seems like our financial system is this big, huge Rube Goldberg machine. It's way overly complicated, and I think the reason why it's way overly complicated like that is because very wealthy people, the institutional investors, they get a skewed the policies in their favor. They get access to money that's being printed by the central bank first, so they have the opportunity to buy uninflated assets. And again, it goes back to, that's why people in the bottom half of the country are just getting crushed.
I'm going to say bottom two-thirds.
Bottom two-thirds, yeah, that's even better, yeah. I think they're just getting crushed, yeah.
It's funny, you know, people will talk about, you know, shedding a tear for people, and nobody wants to shed a tear for anybody who's got more than them, right?
Yeah,
but in fact, you know, I don't consider, you know, a couple of people that, you know, whatever they did, either they were entrepreneurs if they took over the parents' business and are doing a nice job with that, or they went and became engineers or accountants or lawyers or whatever they did. People that did all that stuff, and you're landed in a, let's say, a suburban house, you know, and they're, you know, they're $600,000 right now, all right, so. You know, you and the wife are both working, which means you're paying for help with the kids. Maybe, depending on where you are, you're paying for private school. Okay, depending on how good the schools are in your area. You're driving to work. Maybe you got a train or maybe not, so you can have a clunker car to go to the train. But if you don't, you have a couple. You don't want your wife driving around in some junk, right? And I don't care if I drive around in a junk, but I don't want Audrey driving around in a junk. So, I mean, it's just, you know, the way things are. So, I mean, you're nut per month is pretty dramatic, and you're not, if you're each making 100 and a quarter, I got news for you, you're not rich.
Yeah.
I mean, the insurance is going up. God help you if you need a new roof. It's not like this isn't affecting you just as much. You're not like the guy who can't pay his rent. I get that part, but it's not like you're not. You can very easily be hurting just as well. God, I don't know where this was. It was a long, long time ago. They did a survey of people in, like, all income brackets. Well, I don't know if they went to the top 1%. They probably didn't. So let's say all but those guys. And they said, Hal, Ricardo, what would it take if I were to write you a check? What would it take to make you, and we're not talking about making you rich. We're talking about just taking care of the stuff that you're worried about now. And maybe you and the wife, you go on a, you know, a week or two vacation somewhere you'd like to go. And if people, at every walk of life, the number came within, you know, a red one of 20% of a year's salary. That virtually everybody was out on their skis by like that amount. That if you made $60,000 a year and they gave you a check for 12, you probably were off on your skis on your credit card for three, you could pay off the five on the car, and oh, by the way, you and your wife could spend $3,000 going to Wisconsin fishing for a week or something, because that's what you do. I'm not saying anything bad about that. I mean, and somebody who's making $250 a year said, boy, if I could just get 50, that pays off the wife's new car, that pays off the credit card, and maybe we could bump the kid up a school, and we can go to, you know, Florida for a week. It was almost the exact number. No matter what the income strata was. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, you know, if you pay off that car now, that car loan, with the way these cars are built today, you know, in 2 or 3 years, you don't want to have that same car.
Oh, no, no.
Because the repair bills are going to be extraordinary because everything's computerized. And so what you're going to end up doing is in 3 years, you're going to sell that car. You're not going to make much money from it. And you're going to maybe use that to get a down payment on a new car, which is going to cost you $50,000-$60,000. And that's the problem right there. I mean, I don't think anybody in the bottom 50%, easily the bottom 50%, can afford the kind of car repairs that these new cars are going to require. So, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you're given right now. Eventually, with the way the system's set up, with this incredible inflation that I think is being hidden from us on purpose. I mean, we see it. We get punched in the mouth by it every day. But the government's got to be, you know, hiding it from us, the true inflation rate. When you're faced with that true inflation rate every day and your salary's not keeping up with it, you just get squeezed. Well,
in the last 4 years since the start of COVID, they've got inflation up 20%. And I think you and I know that it's somewhere between 36 and 42.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the number. I mean, it's not even, I don't see how you can.
Well,
you can,
these people that work for government, they have this incentive. I mean, they want to make the people they work for happy, and they got to make the policies. And they probably like the people that they work for, the politicians they work for. So what are you going to do? You're going to make them look bad, or you're going to make them look good? You're going to err on making them look good.
Yeah, but I mean, when you have the debt they're throwing out there and the money they're giving to the people, for whatever reason, think they deserve it. You know, and a lot of people in this country are getting a lot of this dough. It's not like the checks are going to nobody. I mean, right?
Yeah.
So you can't pay it back. Now, what's the simplest way, if I control the printing press, is if you loan me money for 10 years, and all of a sudden I can debase the currency, that when I give you the money back in 10 years, it's not worth near as much as when you gave it to me. That's how you work your way out of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, every country, I mean, this is not new. People did this in the middle. For God's sake, the Romans did this. But the point is people used to be on, when I say they were on the gold standard, remember that something bad happened, the country got off the gold standard. But as soon as they did, it was a huge warning flag to everybody else saying these guys are messing with their currency, right? I mean, as soon as you did, matter of fact, if you go back in U.S. history, and in the Civil War, the North went off the gold standard. Well, so did the South, right? The South started printing up a lot more money than they should have. And if you look at, you know, like how was the Civil War won? Well, okay, you look at Gettysburg, you look at Vicksburg, you look at those kinds of things. There were these military, you know, wins by the North that eventually. But you look at, okay, why did the North win? Well, they had more people, but they also had more industry. And one of the reasons why two reasons. One, they started out with more industry, but secondly, the Confederacy destroyed themselves by inflating their currency to where people, it was useless. Not only that, it was really easy to counterfeit, right? So people, they got even worse. So the Union, their money supply increased by about 10% a year. All right, so that was their inflation rate. It didn't. We were way more than that during COVID. Now you can't tell me that COVID was a more serious national emergency than the Civil War, for God's sake. Yeah. I mean, really?
Yeah, 620,000 people died in that war.
Yeah,
the population of the United States was substantially less than it is today.
Well, now how many people had no arms, no legs, and they came back because nobody? Yeah. That's all he did was cut your arm or leg off. You were wounded.
And what was that person going to do back then when there was? What kind of work could they do? I mean,
yeah.
Well, how do you that person's life?
How do you run your farm with one arm and one leg? I mean, God's sake. Yeah. So anyway, so at the end of the war, the Union said, okay, we got these greenbacks out there. I mean, you know the definition of why they called them a greenback. The only thing behind them was the green on the other side, right? The print, hence the name greenback. So they dragged the greenbacks out of the economy and actually lowered the money supply. So they got back, so they could get back on the gold standard, and the society actually had some very positive growth years, even though the money supply was going down. So like I said, what about the Confederacy? The industrial part just shut down because the currency was no good. Everything was inflated. Yeah. And, you know, these lessons are right there.
They are, yeah.
And I'm in my, matter of fact, my nephew a couple of weeks ago told me everything that Milton Friedman said has all been debunked. And I go, by who exactly?
Somebody with an opinion?
Yeah, somebody. I mean, I'm not saying that his views on, politics and his views on whether or not, you know, if you get a freer market, that the totalitarian regime is going to fall. Those opinions, I think, time have proven out, were probably wrong. Okay. And he'd probably admit it today if he was still around. But the idea that, you know, the history that he did, this is what happened in 1912 to the money supply and the economy, that has never been debunked. Who the hell went back and even did that again?
Yeah.
I mean, who would take that on, that kind of work again, like he did? And him, well, he had a staff, but still. I mean, have you ever read part of that, the monetary history of the United States?
I haven't read that. No, I haven't got to. I should.
Well, you're never going to quote read it, you know, because it would drive you nuts. But there's all kinds of charts in there, graphs, whatever you want to call them. Every one of those things, Hal, must have taken somebody 6 months.
Well, yeah, they didn't have the kind of computing power we had today. They didn't have the kind of software programs we had today. So it's just incredible statistical work, yeah.
But before there was, maybe you know the definition of this, I'm putting you on a spot here. The one I could not get, I actually had to go to the book and get the definition. There wasn't so much M1, M2. They used the term hot money. Hot money people could easily get their hands on. You ever heard that term before, hot money?
No, I never heard that. No.
Well, maybe next week I'll look it up and see what. But it's somewhere.
What I'll do is I'll read through his monetary history of the United States.
Well, you're not going to read that. It's more like an encyclopedia than a book.
Yeah.
What you can do is, if you're interested about a specific time frame, you can read that chapter. But by the time you do that, you're sound asleep. I mean, it's bad. But I mean, you just look at the amount of work that went into it, and you're like, oh, yeah, all that research is no good anymore. What do you mean it's no good anymore? Duh. But, you know, but I just think the education is not there. I mean, there's no blowback. I mean, Carl's always talking about, I mean, how can in this country can we have, you know, and he's talked about the part of the deficit that we can't handle. I mean, Social Security is actually pretty close. You could increase the contribution by, you know, 5%. And you could raise the thing like 1 year, and I'm not being exact here, the retirement age like 1 year or a year and a half, and all of a sudden the Social Security gap is pretty much closed.
Yeah.
Where the Medicare and Medicaid gap, contributions are only like 40% of the outlay.
Mm.
That we're not even on the same page there. So why are we hiding behind that industry and saying that it's only 6% of the environment? GDP when it's really 20. But I can make a pretty solid case, but I need your help because I need some stats behind it, that if you take 2000 to today and you run the 6% of the basket that they have in the CPI and you put it at, say, 15 or 18, and it's 20 now, but it probably wasn't the whole way. If you make that 15 or 18% of the basket, your CPI would probably go up at least a percent a year, a percent and a half a year, at least. And if you did that, I'm going to say we were probably in a recession at least a third of the time between 2000 and today. If you reweight
the CPI like that, you reweight the GDP deflator.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
And,
yeah,
and you alter the real GDP number. Yeah,
exactly. And I don't think we weren't much more than what was our growth, 2.5, and we said that inflation was 1. If you make the inflation 2.5, we're right there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I actually think we should scrap the CPI. I'm not scrap it, but not use it as an indicator for inflation. It's an indicator for consumer price changes in consumer prices. What we need to use is some kind of running average of the, maybe a 10-year running average, something on M2. I think M2 would be a better indicator of inflation.
They should match up.
Yeah.
And you know what?
They should, yeah.
If you gave it a real CPI number without an adjustment, it probably would. SP Futures down 18. Yeah. NASDAQ Futures down 51. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamara Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 19. NASDAQ futures down 52. We've been pretty much here the whole. We might have started out down 70 on the NASDAQ, so it's come down a little bit, but we've been kind of in the same range. Dow down 120, individual stocks in the Dow. CVX down, right, Chevron Texaco down $1.55. No surprise there with oil prices dropping like they are. Home Depot's down $1.73. That's kind of about it. Microsoft down $1.40. Nothing else crazy. American Express down $1.88. So that's what's causing the Dow futures to be down 119. Over in Europe, we've got some selling here. We've got, although they've come back, DAX was down a full 1%. Now it's only down 122.67%, so it's come back some. FTSE's now only down 23.3%. CAC around down 28.4%. Again, they're down, but not as much as they were an hour ago. Over in Asia, India stocks, which made a record yesterday, down 5% today. A broken dream in India. Nikkei down 85.2%. Hang Seng up 41.2%. Shanghai up 12.4%, so not a whole lot going over in the China and Japan group. Yesterday, Dow was down 115, S&P down, up 5, NASDAQ up 93. All that happened in the last half hour. We were down most of the day and it rebounded on the close, really kind of like we have the last few days. Bonds down 4 basis points, 4.36. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.54. Japan down 4 basis points, 1.02. So kind of a interest rates lower across the board, which means bonds are up. We've got oil down $1.15, 73.07, was below 73 last time we did this. These guys are down from, they were like 81, I'm going to say last Wednesday, somewhere in there. Brent down 112, 77.24. Natural gas up a penny, 277. RBOB down 2 cents, 231. Gold, which was up 20-some bucks yesterday, it was down 20 today, but now it's only down 15. So it's 23.53 is the number. Silver down 73 cents, it was down 85 an hour ago. Let's back up over 30.06. We've got foreign exchange kind of right where we've been, 108.6 on the euro and 127.6 on the British pound. So most of the action's been in between the U.S. and the yen. The yen's been heading south, and there's some big moves actually between like the yen and the British pound. So it's not just us. It's not just all about us. Crypto, Bitcoin down 54 bucks, 69,042. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:42 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 74 degrees right now with a high of 81. Warm and humid with variable cloudiness. Widely separated thunderstorms this afternoon, which could bring damaging winds, flash flooding, and hail. We got a low of 68 degrees here in Chicago. Over to Phoenix, 75 degrees right now with a high of 103. Partly sunny and very, very warm. Tonight will be clear with a low of 78 degrees. Air quality is poor and there is an excessive heat warning, so make sure you're staying hydrated. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, we're looking at 33 minutes. 57 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. We're looking at 47 minutes inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 28 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be 37 minutes. On the sports, in the MLB, Diamondbacks beat the Diamondbacks beat the Giants 4-2 in Arizona. And today we got the White Sox playing the Cubs tonight at Wrigley Field in Chicago, 7:05 p.m. And just a quick reminder that keep in mind that the NBA Finals are coming this Thursday, June 6th. Dallas Mavericks play the Boston Celtics in Boston at 7:30 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Well, hell, they're not gonna ax me, but I know it's all TV and it's all everything these days, but they have this 7-day pause in the playoffs of the NBA when people are used to watching it every other night. I don't think that's a good idea, but they're not axing me, like I say.
Well, yeah, when the Rockets, when Hakeem Olajuwon won his first, man, those guys, they were road dogs. I mean, they would go, I think the series would go 7, and then like 2 days later, they were scheduled to start a new series, and they'd go 7, and then 2 days later, they'd schedule another 7. I mean, they were just never
going to be. That's the way it was scheduled this time. If they'd go on 7, they'd still be, probably the last game would be tonight.
Well, I mean, I think in the past, if both teams had wrapped up the series earlier, they would have started the series two days later, right?
Yeah, they would have moved. They would have moved it up.
A week and a half off.
Especially crazy in baseball when you're pushing November anyway, and all of a sudden both teams are, say if there's a 4-game sweep, to wait like 10 days to start a baseball game in November is really nuts. You'd think you'd want to start as soon as you could.
Well, I think what they want to do also is they want to start the series on a Thursday, and then they know that people aren't going to be watching on a Friday and Saturday night. So maybe they, you know, just the way they watch on a Saturday afternoon. So you got to start on a Thursday. So they're trying to figure out how to get the maximum number of viewers. So they're going to pick days and time periods to maximize viewership. So I think that goes into
it too. I was pretty into watching it. And now I'm sitting there. I'm over it. I probably will get back into it, but you know, I'm like, oh yeah, those guys got another series, don't they?
it's kind of boring basketball, though. I mean, they both run the same offense, from what I can tell. They have like four guys standing outside the 3-point line. Some guy drives the lane, and then he passes to the open guy who shoots the three. I mean, it's really boring basketball.
I think it is.
It's really hard to watch.
It is. Playoffs are a little better than the regular season, but and the weird part is if you get behind by 10 points, the next 5 shots are going to be 3-pointers. So if you miss them, and the other guy, all of a sudden you're down 20 and the game's over.
Yeah. Well, and then the game goes, you know, you're down 15 in the first half and somehow you beat them by 10.
Yeah.
And then it just, the 7-game series is just too long, because then you could take a game off, right? You take I think that's what happened to the Denver Nuggets. They took a couple games off because they figured they'd be able to beat them at home, you know.
Well, the hardest game is the fourth.
Yeah.
I mean, the other team is pretty desperate.
You're up 3-0. You're playing maybe on their court, and you just kind of like, all right, we're gonna tank this one, and we're gonna go home and, you know, beat them on our court, right? I don't think Jordan ever had that mindset.
I don't think. I tell you what,
he went for the juggler. He never took a night off.
I played a lot of basketball, but I played softball like forever. I never, even if we were up by 9 runs in softball, I kept pushing it. Let's get out of here before somebody like gets hurt or something. The last thing we want to do is start screwing around and somebody gets hurt, then what?
Yeah, run them.
Yeah, just do the best. I mean, I don't think any player at that level wants to play a game they don't have to play.
Yeah.
Knowing what can happen anytime down the floor. I mean, if you can get done in 4, you get done in 4. I mean, the other team might come out absolutely desperate because they don't ever want to get swept.
I never understood this thing of getting tired either, because you know, at the high school I played at, I played on the offense, I played on the defense, I played on kickoff, and I played on punt, and I never got tired ever. Never got tired.
But you played
when I played basketball. I never knew I was hurt or tired until I sat down. I was like, oh,
I get tired. But you also played. What's high school? 12-minute quarters.
Yeah.
At 15.
Well, in my late teens and early 20s, I played 10 games in a row, probably 4 or 5 nights a week, you know, for 4 hours straight. I mean, we keep the court, winner take the court.
Oh, yeah.
I played 10 games in a row at elevation, at sea level, and I never, ever got tired, never, ever sat down. It was 5-on-5. For 10 games in a row, and I never got tired.
Well, you think you don't, you know, but you're a lot of it is in the physical part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, in basketball, I mean, I used to play, you know, inside. I was one of the taller guys. And you could run back and forth, but it was the constant somebody leaning on you, pushing. I mean, it was more strength involved in this.
Yeah. Well, if you're like Zion Williamson and you're carrying, you know, 300 pounds, it's got to take a toll. When I played basketball, I was, you know, 6'1", and I was about 170 pounds. And
you go all night,
I never, I can go all night, yeah. No problem. And then I never wanted to lose ever.
No. Well, I
wanted to win every game, whether it was church basketball, pickup, 21. I never took a playoff. Never. I never wanted to come out of the game.
Well, when I started playing with these guys there were all kinds of athletes, as you can imagine, on the trading floor. I mean, there was 2,500 people in a room. And a lot of these guys have played college ball, high school ball. And so I got on this, you know, I was always on one of the better guys on, you know, my own neighborhood basketball team, right? Which is fine because, you know, you learn how to, you know, you're pretty much sort of the go-to guy, but you know, not in a huge way. Everybody did with it, you know, everybody got a chance to shoot and everything. But all of a sudden you get on these teams where they got all these really good guys.
Yeah.
And I never learned before then how hard it is if the only time you ever get a shot is if somebody didn't get theirs. You know, you know, it is so hard to go 3 for 5.
Yeah.
Because you're never getting the ball where you want it. And then if you miss one, then they go, oh, yeah, well, that's why we don't give them the ball. You know, it's a type of thing. So we clobbered this one team, and one of the guys almost runs over me on his way to the scorer's table. And I go, Billy, where are you going? He goes, let's see how many points I had. I go, what difference does it make? We won by 30. who cared? I never once cared. I mean, in softball, if I didn't get a hit, that was probably one of the reasons why we lost. But if I didn't get a hit and we still won, I got over it real quick. If I was 3 for 4 and we lost, I was pissed off, right? I mean,
you know, what's really funny, Tom, is when I during the pandemic I went down to St. George to do this tournament with a bunch of D1 players, and Paolo Banchero was there, and I did his Friday night game and a Saturday game. Those guys, they did 2 games a day in that tournament. I did 8 games a day on average. I think I did 8 on Saturday, ended up doing like 9 on Sunday. I ended up doing like 17 games. Well, it might have been 6 games a day.
As long as you don't I saw the I'm going to ask you more about this market here in a second. We got some time, but the first sign of aging that I found was I could go play basketball for 2 hours. It wasn't a problem. I still could, but I started playing these handball tournaments.
Uh-huh.
And I was never an A. I was a upper B maybe guy, but I was never with the A group. But still, it was pretty good handball. And if I played 2 matches and won, well, if I didn't win, I wouldn't have another match. Then all of a sudden, if I had to sit an hour before the next game, you couldn't stop. This is like in my mid 30s. I'm like, wait a minute, it's gonna take me a while in this next game before I'm warmed up again. You know, you know, you couldn't just stop and maybe you see these baseball
turn
players.
Turn it on.
Yeah. You see these baseball players, this huge workout they do in the morning.
Yeah.
Then they screw around the clubhouse for 2 hours and come out and play. No wonder they're all getting hurt.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know that tournament I was doing 6 in a row, Friday night.
Yeah,
Saturday,
I'm saying 6 in a row is easier than 3, wait an hour, and then 4.
Well, you know, and we were only doing 2-man mechanics, 2 officials at this high level D1. I mean, Banchero's a rookie of the year, right?
Yeah.
And I'm doing 2 of his games, and on Friday night, I swear to God, COVID, you know, social distancing, everybody wanted to watch this dude. Everybody was in the gym. There were so many people in the gym, not social distancing, that there were feet on the floor, and I'm running down the sideline. The fans' feet are on the floor. I'm sprinting down the sideline, keeping up with these elite players. I'm with them the entire way. My foot clips a fan's foot. I do a somersault. I after the somersault's over, I roll right into a standing position, and I run without stop. I run to the baseline and continue to referee.
Did they cheer you?
I wish I had that on video, man. I can't find the video.
Did they cheer you?
No, I don't think anybody noticed. But I did a somersault right in front of a team bench, you know, just south of the team bench where a fan was standing. I somersaulted right into a great dismount, and I just continued to referee the game.
Nobody clapped.
I was 52 at the time.
Well, right? Yeah. Hey, all right. So we have government doing what they're doing. You know, we're still getting some money into the system. We've got stocks that are, you know, let's say historically high in valuation. Doesn't mean that that's a tradable event. It could mean that, you know, the market, the economy grows into it. You have what appears to be a slowdown in some parts of the economy. Yesterday, what caused a lot of the shenanigans in the morning was the manufacturing survey was well under 50, which means contraction.
Chicago PMI was at 34, 35.
Yeah, I mean, and some of I don't pay attention to a lot of that, you know, but yeah. But still, it's, you know, showing some kind of, and we have you know, the debt loads on every level keep going up, margin loads, and the securities keep going up. Are we going to be able to schmooze our way through this with gradually rising wages and maybe inflation dropping to a real level where one actually catches the other? Or are we looking at some kind of a, hey, wait a minute, my stock was 90, now it's 40. Are we going to look at that? Some people are calling for it. I don't want to see that happen. I have my people protected. Where I'm going to say, for just about all my clients, if the market were to drop 40, we'll lose 7 to 10, maybe 5 to 7, depending on how snug the puts are. So on a relative basis, we'll do a boatload better than everybody else, but it's not, still not winning, really. You know, I mean,
Have you got them in any stocks that have zero betas or negative betas?
Most of the people, unless the clients, you know, have legacy stock.
Yeah.
I mean, I never really wanted to be, when you see stuff that happened with United Airlines and GM and Sears and stuff, you don't really want to give somebody the worst conversation you can have, Hal, is if, you know, if Papa Hal came in with five stocks and said, what do you think of these? I mean, what if this would have been 15 years ago and you say, I got Sears, Kmart, General Motors, United Airlines, and Bear Stearns? I'd say, well, those all look pretty good.
Yeah.
Oops. they all went BK, right? They're all worthless. I mean, I try and put, maybe it's because I traded in the OEX, I'm more comfortable with it, but people that I manage, now you can almost trade them. There's so many, there's probably seven or eight indices that, if you're going to trade options, are liquid enough to do it properly. I mean, you've got obviously the Qs, the Russell, the Spider, then you've got some of the little ones, like if you want to trade the XLE, the oil thing, that's a pretty good trader. My brother is real, a lot of his clients are in the XLV, the healthcare part, and he's able to get pretty good liquidity in there. So if somebody doesn't have a stock or two that they really like, I would rather put somebody in the index. Now the question is, now do you want to, how close do you want to buy the puts? I mean, the spiders are 526. Well, if I'm kind of worried about the market, you know, do I buy the 525 puts? And what kind of deductible do I give myself? Do I buy it at 520? If somebody says, "Oh, I'm just worried about if the market collapses 40%," we could go out a year and we could buy the 500 puts or something, which means we got a $26 deductible. Then the question is, do you want to sell any calls against it? Well, that's been a real struggle the last few years. The market has gone up so fast, especially in the Qs, that we got caught on some calls. Now in the Russell, it went up, but never that fast, so we're fine in there. Spiders, you know, we got caught a little bit. Depends on when you start talking about 10, 15, 20% years to the upside, you probably don't want to be selling calls. But most times, if you went back 40 years, I mean, selling calls, covered calls, is a pretty good strategy. But it's all about timing, right? So the question is, I mean, if you're going to try and, I mean, insurance costs money. I mean, right? And for the last 15 years, except for a few times, if you just would have closed your eyes and went on vacation, you basically pissed away the money on insurance on the indexes. Now, on individual stocks, you would love to have had puts in Sears or Kmart or United Airlines, right? But, you know, the question is, I mean, people have a different mentality. I don't get this, Hal. Maybe you can, in a couple of minutes, you can explain it to me. When the market, if somebody buys a stock at 80, maybe they want to have some price protection on it. But when the market runs up, the more it runs up, the less people want insurance. And then when it runs down, you see the VIX go way up for the insurance. In other words, if NVIDIA here, I don't even know what their volatility, I'll just use them. They're trading, say, 1150, 1147. I'm going to say if the thing drops to 800, which I'm not predicting, the volatility is going to be higher. The cost to put's going to be higher at 800 than it was at 1150. And you would think there's less risk at 800 than there was at 1150. If the market is exactly opposite the mentality than you would expect.
Tom, nobody buys tornado insurance, right? They don't buy tornado insurance unless the tornado's headed at right.
Well, that's
right.
Exactly right.
They'll get on the phone. Hey, I need some tornado insurance quick.
But I mean, the people that we have as clients, and most of my people again are a lot more educated than the average retail person. Yeah. They may say somebody might have, well, some of the firms I do business with, they might have $2-3 million worth of Apple stock or something.
Yeah.
Well, you worried about the sample? Nope, not at all. I mean, I don't care. I mean, it might go down, it'll come back up. I mean, the last thing I want is insurance, which is fine. I get that. But the same person, I'm not talking about liability where you run over somebody. But the same person might have a 28 Chevy worth $400 when think of driving out of the garage without collision insurance.
Yeah.
You know, what for? I mean, it's not worth anything. Yet, yeah. It is amazing the mentality difference. The people don't look at, like, a GameStop is an asset that has risk.
I mean, if you really think about it, though, why? I don't think people want to sell their position. And it's really kind of weird because if you sell that position, you have to pay a tax on it. So maybe that explains why people are going to hang on to this thing longer than they would normally, right? I don't know.
I can only say a couple things in absolute certainty about the market, Al, even for all this time. I will say this. Anybody, if I had a dime for every time a person did not make the proper trade because of tax consideration, I'd be the richest man in the world. Because people go, gee, I bought this stock at 50. It's trading 150. It's pretty high here. You know what? If I sell it, I got to pay this tax. Capital gains is 21%. Get over it. Yeah. So what are you going to wait for it to go back down to 50? Now you're better off. You don't pay any taxes.
Well, I mean, think about what think about in the absence of such a tax. Do you think the people would be more likely to move stuff in and out?
Oh, without a doubt.
Stocks?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So maybe that is part of reason why we get this, what people call irrational exuberance. I don't think it's irrational exuberance. I think it's they don't want to pay the tax and the Fed is a money printing machine that creates inflation.
Well, plus they fall in love with these companies.
Yeah,
and they fall in love with the chairman. They fell in love with Bill Gates. They fall, and then you can't. It's like people fall in love with the Bears. I mean, you might like to watch football, but falling in love with the McCaskies, really? I mean, come on.
Well, that reminds me. I taped the 30 for 30 85 Bears special, and I got to watch it.
Oh yeah, it'll be.
I love the 85 Bears.
Oh yeah, well, boy, what a bunch of characters, huh?
Yeah.
But, you know, I at my reunion, I was very close to Dave Casper, and he was complaining about how much trouble he has even walking.
Dave Casper? Yeah. The tight end?
Yeah. He graduated with me. Matter of fact, I almost went up to him and said, buddy, your ears burning, because people talk about the difference between, you know, today's, you know, NIL and this, everybody transferring back and forth, and how it's the same as it always was, only a little worse. And I'm going, no, it wasn't. I mean, Dave Casper was actually in half of my economics classes with me. I don't know if he was all that enthused to be there, but he was not a dummy, and he didn't have a phone on his desk checking out the transfer portal. He was actually taking notes like everybody else. I mean, he realized that, you know, if football was going to be good for him, that would be nice. But he was also there. He never saw the guy cutting that many classes. Everybody cut a few, but he was always there. I mean. Pretty regular. I mean, and he got his degree. I mean, it's surely not the same where all you do all day long is check out the latest offer on the transfer portal. It was nothing like that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, that maybe he got a little spiff someplace from somebody or at a summer job that he made money on or something. I mean, I'm not saying there was nothing like that, but the degree is, we're not even the same planet, are we?
Well, the tuition back then was, what, $2,000-$3,000?
Was $3,200 was $1,000 for room and board.
Now it's what, $40-$50?
And room and board's like $16.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's scary. That's a lot of good chow. Of course, the dining halls have definitely been upgraded.
Well, my first tuition check at Lewis Clark State College when I got out of college or high school, my first tuition check, because I was paying as I went, it was only like $500 or $600.
Well, my University of Chicago MBA I'm going to say my entire 2 years. Now, I skated a little. When I say I skated, I took two classes in the summer because they weren't filling up, and I gave everybody a discount. So I graduated a quarter early by taking four classes my last 2 quarters. So, I mean, my total cost, University of Chicago, I'm going to say was $5,800.
Wow.
Now one class, I think, is $7,000.
Yeah, wow.
Then you got to take 20 classes.
Yeah.
So my whole education was less than one class now.
And that probably felt like a lot of money back then, didn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, but I didn't live there. I lived at home, so I didn't have to pay for the room and board.
Yeah.
And I was able to work weekends on the truck dock. So, I mean, my parents had enough. I think they paid. They actually wrote the tuition check. But
everything
else, all the books, all the getting back and forth, all that stuff was all on me.
For that reason, Tom, working the docks while you went on your MBA is why I would support you as a Treasury Secretary. Well, right? Yeah. Because you worked on docks.
Like, but there were some characters. We got a dash, but I got a good one. One day I hear this crash. Right, I'm going, what the hell was that? Well, you know, I don't know if you know anything, but the 45 footers, the big trailers, they're stable. So when you have the front wheels down, they're not attached to the tractor. You can drive all over and put weight wherever you want in those things. They're stable. But the little ones, the pups, aren't.
Yeah.
So you had to put this thing. It looked like a big phallic thing. Underneath the front of the thing, so
Virgin Airlines spaceship.
Yeah, but you had to run out there with this thing, and you put it under the front because the wheels, if you put too much nose much in the front, the thing would go down, right? So these guys, they had the thing in the front, and some guy put like 2,000 pounds of steel of some kind right in the nose of the pup, right? They call them pups. Mm. If you go down the road, you see a tractor hauling two trailers. They call those the pups. They're 22 feet. Or they were. So they tell the guy, hey, drive on the back of that thing with the forklift, because they're heavy as hell, and hold it down while the guy attaches the tractor to it. And the guy could pull the thing out from the front. Well, the guy pulls the thing out from the front, and the guy feels a little shake, figures the tractor is attached. He drives off the back. Well, the front part immediately goes down. Fortunately, doesn't hit the guy who had just moved the thing. The back end goes up, comes down, and it clips the end of the roof. So it's sitting there with the back end on the roof. So it's like 8:15 or whatever it was. So the day shift, these guys come down with the forklifts. They go, hey, go down there and fix that truck. So they go down there with a couple of forklifts, and the guy goes, that looks like wash-up time for me. I think we leave this for the day job. And they left. And they left. I don't know how they got the thing down without some big crash somewhere. But when I went to work that night, it was down, so somehow they got it down. Minus a gutter, that's for sure. Oh, it looks like one for the day shift, and off they went. Yeah. S&P futures down 16, the NASDAQ futures down 37. Yeah, hey, all have a great week, buddy. Talk at you next week. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.